From the editors at Paranormal Underground and Ghost Night Publishing, welcome to Paranormal Underground Presents, where you can explore the unexplained with our panel and special guests.
Okay, everyone, here we go. Podcast number 3. Welcome. I'm Karen Frazier. We have a great show planned. Let's get started.
I'd like to introduce my co-host. He's been my co-host before. We're glad to have him back. Welcome, J.D. Harrison. Hey, J.D.
Hey, Karen. Good to be here. Thanks for having me back.
Yeah.
We have an interesting show tonight. We're going to be speaking with Mark Macy. Mark is an instrumental transcommunication researcher and the publisher of several books, Spirit Faces, Truth About the Afterlife, and his most recent book, Miracles in the Storm. Mark had a brush with death from colon cancer in 1988 and claims that this changed his life and made him interested in ITC. Mark has, in his book, has focused on spirit photography and other aspects of contacting the deceased, and he has published many of these photographs using an instrument known as the Illuminator. It should be pretty interesting.
Yeah, definitely. Now, I interviewed Mark last month for our March issue of Paranormal Underground, which is available right now, and it was a really interesting interview. He has a lot of thoughts about communicating with spirits on the other side. His work can be found on his website, which is www.worlditc.org. There's all sorts of things on there. There's pictures that he's taken. There's recordings of voices. It's very interesting to look at. Now, before we get to Mark, let's go ahead and introduce our panelists. Our first panelist is our publisher. Welcome to Chad Wilson. Hey, Chad.
Hey, how you doing?
Good. Mark Macy, are you ready?
Sure am.
All right, cool.
Our second panelist is a member of Paranormal Underground, Teresa West. Teresa, are you ready for Mark tonight?
I believe I'm ready. Hi, guys. How's it going?
Hey, Teresa.
It's going good.
So,
good.
Teresa, you've been reading Mark's book.
Yeah, I've read about halfway through it today.
Great. So I'm sure you have some pretty interesting questions for him then.
I hope he finds them that way.
Well, I think you'll enjoy talking to Mark. He's a very nice man. He's been really very good with us with the magazine, so we really appreciate it. Okay, well, let's go ahead, if everybody's ready, and introduce our guest. As JD said, he is an ITC researcher. He's one of the top ITC researchers in the world, and he's written two books. He's written more than two books, but the two books that we mentioned, he's written Spirit Faces and also his new book, which just came out this month, Miracles in the Storm. Welcome to Mark Macy.
Hi.
Hi, Mark. Glad to have you with us. Thank you so much for coming on. We're looking forward to talking to you.
My pleasure.
All right. Well, let's get started with our questions. We have 30 minutes with Mark. As you know, each of our panelists has 10 minutes. The first panelist to ask questions is going to be Teresa. Go ahead, Teresa.
Thank you, Karen. Hi, Mark. It's a pleasure talking with you this evening.
Hi, Teresa. Likewise.
And just for the listeners of the podcast, I'm going to start off with a quote from the first chapter of Spirit Faces, because it has to do with my questions. It begins, "More to life than meets the eye. Colon cancer nearly killed me in 1988. Until that point, I was agnostic. I didn't believe in God or ghosts or an afterlife. But with death staring me in the face and suddenly gripped by fear, I gradually became consumed by the question of what really happens to us after we die. My questions are based on this area of your book. And my first question is, how did the experience of fighting cancer inspire your research, and have you reached any conclusions in the last 20 years through your ITC research?
Oh, certainly. Before the cancer, I hadn't thought anything about the afterlife. I assumed it was all just wishful thinking. So when I became involved, I met a man named George Meek, who was considered to be the father of ITC. I met him at a conference in Fort Collins in 1991, and he shared some evidence that he had gathered, including the Spiricom device that he and another man had developed, which allowed two-way dialogue between his colleague Bill O'Neill and a man in spirit named Doc Mueller, Dr. George Mueller. So when I heard that dialogue between someone on earth and someone in spirit, I figured if it was for real, it's exactly the kind of hard evidence I needed. And he also showed a picture and a letter that his wife had sent him after she died. And these two items had come through a computer in Europe while he was at home in North Carolina.
Wow.
So that kind of evidence convinced me that there was really something to this. And so George shared his model of the afterlife, how we have not just a physical body, but several spiritual bodies superimposed over our own. And he explained how these spirit bodies live on after the physical body dies. And the more I became educated in this way and convinced through the evidence, that just made a total transformation for me. I realized that life does go on forever, basically, and these lifetimes on Earth are just a kind of fleeting. And when you understand that, it kind of removes a lot of fear from your life, and you breathe a lot more easily in this lifetime and tread more lightly on the Earth.
I think that's something that all of us could take a message from. And my second question is, could you tell us a bit about your earliest spirit photos? Around about what time did you first experience your photographs?
I heard about a fellow named Jack Stuckey, who's a therapist in Colorado Springs, and he happened to be at a conference in Boulder one summer, so I went to visit him at the hotel where they were having the conference. He had brought his Luminator device, and what he did was his clients would stand in the presence of the Luminator, and he would take pictures of them with a Polaroid camera, and sometimes the face in the picture came out very clearly superimposed by another face, or sometimes even two or three faces of people who were not present physically in the room. And when I saw that, I realized right away that these were spirit bodies emanating, manifesting, or showing themselves with the physical body. So I purchased Illuminator in 1999, and that Christmas we had a lot of guests come over, and I took pictures of friends and family, and it was amazing the number of spirit faces that showed up on film. So that became an integral part of my research from that point on.
Great. What a Christmas.
Yeah, that was quite a Christmas.
At what point, and who was your first contact, or who do you believe was the first voice that you heard over a device such as a phone or a radio or a computer?
Yeah, right about 1993 or 1994 was when I began to experiment with a tape recorder and a radio. And it was several months before I started getting EVP voices. Most of them I didn't recognize. But one morning I heard a voice that said, it kind of whispered loudly into the tape. It said, I was asking what my spirit friends knew that I could do that would help in making these contacts clearer and louder. And a voice said, your mind's too much in turmoil. And I had heard the voice of Konstantin Raudive, a spirit friend of ours, on a number of occasions who had come through telephones and radios. So it sounded very distinctly familiar to me as the voice of Konstantin Raudive. And that's the first voice I recognized.
Wow. All right. I think I may be getting a little bit close to my time here. But I'm a huge John Denver fan, and I've seen in your book, Spirit Faces, the truth about the afterlife, that you have a spirit photo of John Denver that came through in one of your photos. I was wondering if you could tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, sure. That was in Colorado Springs. Jack Stuckey and I both had our Luminators there, and they were running, and we were taking pictures of all the people in the workshop that I was giving, and one of the women there was Joy Schilling, who owned a metaphysical bookstore in Colorado Springs. And when the picture developed, it was very clearly the face of John Denver. Now, I asked Joy if she'd known John, and she said she'd never met the man, and she wasn't even particularly fond of his music. But at the same time, there were some of his friends from Lifetime who had contacted me, one woman in particular, an acquaintance of his. And since that time, we had been hoping that he would make contact, since he had Colorado connections. And I actually loved his music. It really resonated with me.
I know that you said in Spirit Faces that you had come out of the service in 1973 and that his music meant a lot to you at that time, living in Colorado.
That's true, yeah. He wrote Rocky Mountain High, and just the idea of the Rockies and songs about Aspen, Colorado just really resonated with me since I was a native of the state.
we got a chance to see him once before he died. I took my mom, and it was a great experience. But I think, actually, that those are the end of my questions, and I'm going to turn it back over to our moderator.
Okay, well, I guess that the next person is going to be JD, is that right?
That's right.
Okay, JD, the floor is yours.
Thank you, Karen. Mark, glad to have you here. Thanks for coming. I have a couple questions for you, and the first few deal with the Illuminator. And my first question, has the Illuminator ever been subjected to any type of scientific scrutiny? And if so, what were the findings?
Let me think about that. I've not heard about any particular scientific analysis done on the Illuminator. I can explain basically what it is. It basically has two counter-rotating fans, one at the top, one at the bottom. So they create a vortex of wind when the device is running. And between the fans, there's a plexiglass barrel that's lined with liquid-filled rings. And the liquid is some kind of water-based liquid, and it's been programmed the way we would program crystals, with intention and information through conscious intention, I guess. And in the course of its operation, when the fans are running, and the fans are the only two moving parts in the whole device, all I know is that it creates this very strong field of subtle energy. Some people who are sensitive to the energy can feel it, kind of feel a bristling sensation when they're in the field of energy. As far as putting some kind of scientific scrutiny, I'm not sure how that would be done. To my knowledge, something like that has not been done.
Okay. All right. Thank you. That leads me right into the second question. Have you ever tested the areas around your photographic subjects for any EMF or other energy field fluctuations when using the Illuminator? And have you considered this as a possible cause for the photographic anomalies that you obtain when using the Illuminator?
That's a good question. I haven't done that. I know when I was being interviewed by a TV program called Sci-Fi Investigates, the four investigators had brought some equipment like that that tested EMF. And the only thing they could detect was when they held the meters close to the Illuminator, near the fans, they could detect some electromagnetic energies. But that was probably caused by the magnetics in the fan itself.
Right.
Yeah, so we haven't really detected any sort of energetic anomalies that could be measured by terrestrial equipment. I mean, as we know, subtle energy is something beyond the electromagnetic range, and for some reason, haven't been able to develop equipment that can sense and gauge that kind of energy.
Right, I understand. The reason I asked you those questions was I know there's been studies done in areas of high EMF, such under high tension lines and things like that, where photographs have been taken and they have come out distorted. Energy, the best way to explain it would be like looking over a hot car hood at something, and you know how that distorts things. We can't see it with our eye, but it's there. And I was just wondering. Right. And I was just wondering, even though it may not create a high EMF field, energy can be measured. It falls somewhere within a spectrum, and it may be producing another form of energy, like you said, but any type of study on this might reveal it. I was just wondering. All right. Well,
yeah,
thank you for that.
Question.
Go ahead.
I wish I could answer that more clearly and in some more detail, but I'm not really certain about that. I've not myself noticed any particular electromagnetic anomalies.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you. Now, my third question, in many of your interviews and also in your books, you mentioned spirit groups and spirit guides. Mm-hmm. How did you become aware of these groups and guides, and what do you feel is their purpose in your life?
That's a real good question. It began for me from other people's experience. I befriended a couple in Luxembourg who were getting the best ITC contacts in the world at that time. They would leave for work in the morning, and they'd turn everything off at home, and they'd sometimes get home in the evening, and the computer would be running, and there'd be new files planted on the disk. The computer had somehow been turned on by what they described as their spirit group. So in reading their materials, I found that they had been told that there were there was a growing group of people on the other side working closely with them. They come close to our world, they can see into our world and see us and work with our equipment, but most of us are kind of invisible to their presence. But they basically become supporters and helpers in establishing the communication bridge. And they talked about having equipment, actual equipment that they use on their side for something they call down modulation and light modulation, which is a means of slowing the vibration of the spirit body so it becomes denser and denser, apparently to the point where they can come into our actual rooms and manipulate our equipment, like turn on a computer or plant a file on a disk or something like that, in some way that sounds kind of science fiction-y to us. But then they also have this light modulation technique they use to raise the vibration of the spirit body so they ascend back to the paradise existence where they live. And what we're finding is all these spirit worlds are not someplace far off in space. They're all superimposed over each other. So when spirit comes to visit us, it's not a long journey for them. It's just simply adjusting their vibrations so they can work more closely with us and with our equipment. But the more of these researchers I talk to, the more of them talk about their spirit guides and their spirit groups. And so sometimes I would get contacts, or my friends in Luxembourg would get contacts through their computer giving names of people who were in my spirit group, people working with me, including Willis Harmon, who was president of the Institute of Nordic Sciences before he died. He was kind of a quiet supporter of our work. And a man named Arthur Beckwith, who was a 19th century journalist. And my father and grandfather were both journalists, and I studied journalism before he got involved in ITC. So I guess we had a resonance in that way. But the more I learned about ITC, the more I talked to the researchers, the more they all seemed to talk about their spirit groups and their spirit guides, like higher beings or ethereal beings who choose to kind of help and protect the people who are involved in this work.
Okay, thank you. Now, how do you feel, what do you feel, should I say, is their purpose in your life?
Their purpose in my life has kind of evolved along with my own purpose. I know even before I got involved in ITC while I was still an agnostic, there would be spirit with me. And as a writer, I know that when I would go into these meditative states, I would get impressions from them. They would actually plant little ideas in my head, and I'd wake up and I'd come out of my half sleep or whatever it was, my meditation, and I'd talk into a tape recorder, these good ideas to write about later. I know the same thing happens to artists and scientists and anyone who's inspired. Your higher self, one of these fine spirit bodies within you, is always in communication with other beings in spirit at that same level.
Almost on the same level that the ancient Greeks would have called a muse.
Yes, yeah, that's a very similar thing, yeah.
Okay, I see. All right, now, one more quick question for you. You were agnostic before.
Mm-hmm.
Has these experiences changed or affected your views on religious belief in any way? And if so, how?
Yes, very definitely. I used to think religion was all just kind of make-believe and wishful thinking. I thought it was perpetrated on the masses. But what I've come to conclude now is that humans have always, not all humans, but at all times there have been humans who knew about the finer realms of existence and the spiritual aspects of humanity. And that's always been a very big part of culture. What I've also concluded from what I've learned about from the ethereal beings is that all religions also have, they do have misconceptions built up in their belief systems. Partly because they would learn truths that were very difficult to explain with early knowledge. For example, today we can say that the spiritual universes, and there are many, many different worlds and realms of spirit, they're all superimposed over our world, and they all remain distinct by their frequency or vibration. And that would have been impossible to describe 1,000 years ago. But today, with our knowledge of radio waves and TV signals, we know that we have a modern-day analogy that makes much easier to understand the true nature of the spirit worlds. And that's why, that's one reason religions have misconceptions built up in them. But also, a lot of the beautiful channeled wisdom that came through in his religious writings, it was altered sometimes down through the ages by different people who wrote about it for political reasons or misinterpretations of an individual. Their intellect might have misinterpreted what was trying to be said. So a lot of people wrote down these channeled materials incorrectly. So those two things, among others probably, are some of the reasons that I believe that religions today are a little bit, they have some misconceptions built up, although the bulk of their teachings, I think, are incredibly filled with wisdom and knowledge and righteous morality, you know, good morality, which is very important for ethical moral living. It's very important in creating a fine spiritual vibration within us. And by doing that, we attract a finer spirit to us. And I think religion has been very important in that regard.
Right. I think you're right there. It's all about worldview and your perception of things. All right. Well, that's all I have as far as for my questions. And I believe our editor, Chad, has a few for you. It's been very good talking to you, Mark. Thank you so much.
Thank you, JD. It's a pleasure talking to a scientist always.
Okay, this is Chad Wilson. I just want to return back to the Illuminator. So you don't know exactly what causes the effect with the Illuminator.
I don't know. I've thought a lot about it, and I think people have done a lot of research on the vortex, on different types of vortices, you know, whether it's electromagnetic vortex or wind vortex, but they seem to create some kind of a portal at times, and I think that might have something to do with it. But also, I've been told that these liquid-filled rings that have been programmed also have something to do with the manifestation of the energy field. But that's beyond that. That's all. I don't know anything beyond that.
So you're not exactly sure that it's paranormal in nature. It could be an effect of the camera, maybe reacting to the low light conditions and whatever energy is being put off by.
Well, I have taken pictures without the Illuminator around.
And you've come up with.
Yeah, I've had no spirit faces show up without the Illuminator.
Because I know. Yeah. Sometimes in low light conditions, if you take a picture with a camera, the shutter will remain open for a longer period of time, and you can actually get what I call drag, where you can have a face and it can drag and blur.
Yeah.
And some of your pictures kind of look like that to me.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think that some of the pictures I've seen would indicate camera blur, the result of a moving camera a little bit, or a person might have moved his head a little bit. Mm-hmm. But others, I don't know if you've noticed, some of those are just so clearly two or three very distinct individuals.
Okay.
Yeah.
So you're not for sure if maybe the energy might be having some effect on the actual Polaroid film? Because that's the only kind of camera you use, correct? Is a Polaroid Instacamera?
Yeah, we've tried all the others. We've tried...
It doesn't work.
Yeah, nothing works.
Yeah. Okay. So why do you think... Because, I mean, myself, I don't believe in coincidences. Mm-hmm. Why do you think you were chosen for this?
Well, for one thing, ever since I was young, I've kind of wanted to understand. I've really wanted to, I've been kind of obsessed almost with understanding things.
Okay.
I used to write about what I thought made the world tick, you know, what made the world go around. But I think when I died... temporarily during cancer, you know, during my surgery, I think I was basically recruited because of my writing skill and my ability to express things clearly in writing. They're kind of complex to understand.
Yeah. I don't have any more questions. Turn it back over to Karen.
Well, thanks, Chad.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Oh, okay, thanks, Chad. Well, Mark, you know, I was listening, and I can certainly relate to a lot of what you're saying because I'm a writer as well. With the stuff that you write about in your books, does it come to you fully formed? Do you have to work at it?
I always have to work at it. I've seen people who can, I've known people who can channel information. It's like automatic writing. It's not their words at all. It's basically going straight through them, but for me, I when I meditate, I can't see things either. I can't see images or things very clearly, but I get concepts, just concepts come flashing into my mind, and I have to labor over the words on how to describe those concepts. That's the kind of semi-channeling, I guess, that I do.
Right. So you actually think more in concepts than in words, and then you write it out as words.
Exactly.
Yeah, I understand. I get ideas fully formed, and I usually don't. I'm pretty lucky. I usually don't have to labor over things unless it's something that doesn't necessarily resonate with me, and then, well.
Boy, I envy that. I have to read my stuff like five or six or sometimes a dozen times, and each time I sharpen it up just a little bit so it reads more clearly and it kind of rolls off the tongue and off the mind a little more easily.
Well, it flows very well. I have just read Spirit Faces. I want to read your new book. Why don't you tell us a little bit about your new book? It just came out this month, right? Or last month? This month?
Yeah. In fact, I received the first shipment last week. It feels like the book I came to Earth to write about this lifetime. It includes a lot of the ITC theory behind it that we've received from the ethereal beings. They explained why the contacts happen and how they happen. But they also explained to us many things that boggled our minds at first, things like in our ancient past. They talked about a world called Marduk. It was also called Eden. And it was a paradise world inhabited by superhumans. And it's the source of the legends, such as the Garden of Eden and the the Greek Titans and the Sumerian Anunnaki, because these Edenites were in our solar system, I believe. They didn't tell us where the world was or how long ago it existed, but I've had to deduce that from science to myth and to correlate all the information, and that's what's in the book, basically. How these Edenites had colonized our world before they destroyed their own world with advanced technologies, and they became stranded here. That the people on Earth at that time, the Edenites on Earth, they were superhumans, and they were the last living Edenites. So they went about crossbreeding with very primitive humans on Earth to develop a human that would be wise and brilliant enough, like them, to eventually create a paradise on Earth. Mm-hmm. That's the plan. That's the purpose of the project. That's what the project is called in other dimensions. And that's why the book title of the book is The Project. And these humans they were trying to create also had to be rugged enough and tough enough to withstand the rigors of life on Earth, because it's not a paradise world at all. Life kills life to survive. And back then, that there were very dangerous creatures that would kill these Edenites, which I think were dinosaurs or some precursor to the dinosaurs. And it goes back not just millions of years, but I believe billions of years, like 3.9 billion years ago, I believe, is when Eden exploded. And that, to me, before I wrote this book, I couldn't believe it would be that early. But so human life on Earth, I believe, began nearly 4 billion years ago, and that goes against everything. It goes against religion and science and
sure.
Everything, but I believe that's the way it is, and that's what the book is based upon.
Mm-hmm. Now, in Spirit Faces, you talked about the boggle point, where people's minds just sort of get so boggled with new information that they shut down. How did you get past this? Because you said when you got this information, it kind of blew your mind. How did you get past that? To actually start to look into it?
It took me months. It took many months of working with the people in Europe who were getting the amazing contacts and reading their reports. And I was always walking a tightrope between falling one way, which would be, this is nonsense, this couldn't be possible, and the other side, which was, well, it's out there, it's outrageous, but, you know, there's so much good, solid evidence supporting it, and there are people I trust who have observed the contacts, that it must be true. So eventually I became more and more aligned with the reality, which I've accepted as the truth of this work, the reality of the spirit worlds and the reality of the world, the people in these worlds of spirit working with us through ITC systems. And it took, I guess, probably more than a year to really become convince myself that of this new paradigm of mine, mm-hmm. spiritual.
I see. Now, do you have time for one more question?
Sure, yeah.
Okay. I was wondering about if people want to do ITC research on their own, what would you recommend to people that they do?
To me, there's a lot of good explanations on the internet on how to do it technically with a tape recorder and the background noise source. So the main thing I would recommend is to learn about what our spirit friends call a contact field. It's the pool of all the thoughts and the attitudes and the beliefs of everyone involved in an ITC project on this side and also on the other side. So it involves you and any colleagues you have plus your spirit group. And all the thoughts and the attitudes form this pool of consciousness or contact field. And if all the thoughts are in harmony, if everyone trusts each other, respects, and loves each other, then the field becomes very clear, and our spirit friends can see through it into our world. They can see us. They can work with our equipment quite easily. But if there's dissonance in the group in the form of envy or doubt or animosity or resentment of some kind, then the field becomes very cloudy, and our spirit friends have a very difficult time working with our equipment. So the key to this is to keep your spirits up, literally. Just keep in a good, fine vibration through your love, trust, and goodwill toward other people. And by doing that, you not only attract a lot of spirits who also resonate with those vibrations of goodwill, but they can actually work with you a lot more easily.
That's interesting. Thank you. So, did you have something, JD? I'm sorry.
Yeah, I was wondering if I could ask just two real quick questions here.
Sure.
Mark?
Absolutely.
Is that okay? Earlier, when you were describing the Luminator to me, you mentioned that it used programmed crystals. Are these quartz crystals by chance?
No, there's a plexiglass barrel, and along the inside of the barrel it has a series of liquid-filled rings, and the liquid is water-based. And what I think I said was that the water is programmed the way we program a crystal.
I see. Okay.
Intention.
All right. My second question, you had mentioned about your recent book, and you had mentioned Marduk and Gilgamesh. Are you familiar with the Epic of Gilgamesh?
You know, I read that in college, when I was in college back in the 70s, and I don't remember what it was about.
Okay, the Epic of Gilgamesh was a Babylonian flood myth, and it is the earliest known writing to man. It was one of the very first ever recorded, and it deals with a man named Gilgamesh, who lived on the world, and of course it's the Noah epic, basically. But Marduk is a big part of this. Marduk was the patron deity of Mesopotamia or Babylonia, and he is within this, and that's why I was wondering, because when you were describing this to me, all these were from the Epic of Gilgamesh, which is a very ancient Babylonian flood myth.
That's interesting, yeah, and I've done research into Zechariah Sitchin and Eric von Doniken and different writers who have studied the various Sumerian and Babylonian and Canaanite cultures and translated some of the hieroglyphics. And a lot of these things do relate, as you said, to a deity named Marduk, which was associated with Jupiter, apparently. And I believe that Marduk was actually the world. In fact, our ethereal friends told us that was the name of the world between Mars and Jupiter before it exploded, and it wound up as an asteroid belt. And so these extraterrestrial Edenites or Mardukites or whatever came to Earth, and that's why on a lot of these ancient drawings we see pictures of spaceships and that kind of thing, because it's all, there gets to be a fine line between spirit and extraterrestrial when we get into our ancient past.
All right. Thank you.
Yeah. I don't know if that's what you were going toward, but that hit me off on a tangent. I'm sorry.
No. That's fine.
That was interesting. Thank you. So, Mark, before we let you go, I was wondering if you had any final thoughts that you wanted to share with the people who are listening.
The main thing I would want to share, I guess, is, again, if you get involved in any kind of spiritual research, especially ITC or EVP, to me, the number one thing to do is stay happy. remain a person of positive intention and goodwill toward other people, and by doing that, you attract really good spirits who can help you in the most amazing ways, not only in your research, but also in your life.
Great. Thank you so much for joining us, Mark. I really appreciate it.
Karen, it was really good. I appreciate it. And Chad, Teresa, and JD, I do appreciate it a lot. Thank you.
Thank you. It was a pleasure.
Thank you, Mark.
Thank you, Mark.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye.
Okay, guys, there he goes. All right, so you ready to talk?
Oh, yeah. I'm ready.
Okay, so let's just start with your initial thoughts, and let's start with JD.
Well, where do I begin? First of all, I wish he could explain how the Luminator works. As a scientist, I have a really hard time accepting the fact that these are spirits he's photographing. There could be a myriad of other things. Mark obviously believes what he's saying, what he's writing about, and I respect that. But there could be a lot of causes for these anomalies in the film, and we wouldn't know that unless there was some type of scrutiny. I asked him specifically, I thought he had said programmed crystals. Apparently he said programmed
like crystal.
Now, I don't know how you program water, but...
Oh, have you ever seen the... What is it called? It's a book, and it's called Something of Water. And it's... let me look it up. You guys talk. I'm going to look it up on the internet.
The way you program crystals is to meditate over them.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe what he's saying is they meditate over the water.
Okay, it could be, but my thought
was...
Just put
positive energy into it.
A quartz crystal...
He said it was a water-based fluid.
Yeah. My thought was that if it was quartz crystal, quartz will amplify any type of energy field. That was a basic principle in the Marconi radio.
Yep.
You use a quartz crystal, and it would actually act as an amplifier. And that's what I was thinking with this, trying to come up with a way, you know, why these anomalies are occurring. But I don't know enough about the device. I haven't really seen one, how it works. It would need to be studied.
This guy's got so much going on. I mean, it seems like he combines everything into like one big giant, what he believes.
Right.
But that's what people do.
But he needs to explain and be able to explain to people, well, this is why this works. I mean, if he wants to be taken seriously by people who are skeptical-minded. I mean, if he doesn't care, then it don't matter.
He believes it's all spiritually controlled. That it doesn't. It's not explainable by modern scientific method. That it's a spiritual event. And I know that doesn't explain anything, but...
We're talking about two different things here. We're talking about science and we're talking about spirituality. And science and spirituality, a lot of times it's hard to look at one and bring the other into it. I'm not saying that they're mutually exclusive because I don't believe that they are. I just think that it is hard to pull those two things together.
It's like subjective information versus objective information. Both of them can be biased. What we have to realize here is this is his worldview, this is his belief, and he has a right to that, and it should be respected. But
yes, of course.
I'm like you, Chad. I feel that scientifically, the mainstream science is, you know, this is just another... He had mentioned Eric von Däniken and the other author who had wrote a book called Nemesis, I believe it was, but... You know, both of those people base their beliefs on assumption, and that you can't do that. That's not scientific at all.
Well, I think it's basically straight pseudoscience.
Well, it is.
I mean, there's nothing out there to prove. I mean, yeah, it's his beliefs, and he's entitled to his beliefs, like you say, but he wants other people to believe it.
Well, I was going to say, I think that he actually has a good message.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh, absolutely. I believe that.
Yes. I like that he wants to spread his message, because what he's saying is good. Be in a good place. Vibrate from a good place. Be a good person. Think happy thoughts. Those are all really good things. I think that his message is good.
But he did agree with me. He did agree with me that some of his photos could have been just the effect of the shutter.
Sure. Sure.
Yes.
Well, I don't think Mark is a scientist. He's a writer. He's a journalist.
Yeah.
And
right.
And so I don't think he never once said when in all of the pointed scientific questions that you were asking, he never when he doesn't if he doesn't know, he says, "I don't know." He says in his book, "I don't know." And he never once he doesn't claim that he has any scientific evidence to back this up. What he says is that this is what I've experienced and this is my interpretation of this experience.
Okay.
Right, and he's entitled to that. It doesn't necessarily mean it's the only answer. That's why here at Paranormal Underground, we try to establish that scientific method within all these investigations to try to come to logical, conclusive answers. And
well,
that's what we're trying to get at.
I believe everybody's viewpoint is valid, but it doesn't always make it the correct viewpoint.
Exactly.
And yes, all your paranormal experiences start with a personal experience, which can't really be validated through science. So I think we try to look at it with a skeptical eye, but we also realize that sometimes you just can't explain things.
Yeah. So just getting back to the water thing real quickly, it is Masaru, M-A-S-A-R-U, Emoto. He's a Japanese author, and he wrote a book called The Hidden Messages in Water. And what he did is he did an experiment with water where he had different vials of water, and one vial of water, they wrote messages on pieces of paper, and they stuck them to the water vials, okay? And there were messages like, "I hate you," and "you're ugly," and "you're stupid," and there were messages like, "I love you," "you're wonderful," and they stuck these all on the water, and then they photographed the water crystals. Okay, you with me so far? And the water crystals that had the beautiful, happy thoughts stuck to them were beautiful crystals. And the ones that had things like "I hate you" and stuff were really ugly looking. And
was it a blonde test, though?
I don't know. You'll have to look that up. I'm just telling you. I mean, I just Wikipedia'd it.
I'm just saying, if somebody went to the situation knowing which labels were on which jar, they might be biased towards.
Right.
I do think that it was blind, but I can't know that. It's The Hidden Messages in Water, and it's a book. It might be interesting to research anyway, just because. Okay. And that's what, when Mark was talking about that, that's what popped to my mind as I saw that on, I don't even know, I think it was on the movie What the Bleep, which was sort of a, not really a quantum physics movie, but they claimed it was about quantum physics.
Hey, Karen, you said water crystals. What did they?
They froze it. They froze
okay.
it.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Sorry.
That's all right. That's all right.
I was wondering the same thing.
There's no such thing as crystal in water.
Sugar crystals.
Yeah, really. No, this was just pure water that they put these messages on. When I saw that, I thought it was really interesting. That was one of the most interesting things I saw in What the Bleep, actually, was that.
Yeah.
So the rest of the movie was, you know, I'm not sure, but it's a different interpretation of quantum physics, which leads me to, you can take anything and you can interpret it any way. Look at quantum physics, for instance. There's the very, very strict interpretation of quantum physics, and then there's the more spiritual one that they showed in What the Bleep, where you create your own reality, and what that means is that things in the universe respond to what you think and what you do and that type of thing. So
that is exactly the point that he brought up in the book, that you could bring about any reality with thought.
Mm-hmm. Well, and that's a very popular interpretation of quantum physics, and it's sort of part of that kind of new age thought, is that you can bring about things with thought. And, you know, I kind of believe that your thoughts can dictate your reality.
Power of positive thinking.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
Yes.
You know what I'm thinking here is you're talking about quantum physics, and with all of this about bringing about a reality, I'm thinking string theory.
Mm-hmm.
Are you familiar with that?
Absolutely, but you might want to explain it.
Well, how each string vibrates at a certain wave, and as long as they're within harmony, they make things happen, basically.
Mm-hmm.
But now this is the most simplified explanation, but when they become out of whack, things start to change. And it's really funny because I'm thinking historically, are you familiar with any of the Welsh beliefs? They had a wizard, they believed in wizards and things, and one's name was Vandemoyden. And it was believed that he could actually sing reality by resonant tones. He could make things happen. He could change the weather. He could, you know, make flowers bloom, things like that. I mean, all different types of things they believed that he could do this just by resonation of different tones in his voice. That's just a thought.
Well, and who's to say that that's not the case? The thing is how do you prove that?
That's just it. You know, maybe we don't have enough information to prove anything. But in order to get that information, we have to stay with serious scientific study.
I understand.
It's the only way we can do that. And, you know, it's like I've said before and before and before, and people before me have said this, and I'm not the one that said this, you know, but we stand on the shoulders of giants, and we build the information, and someone will get on our shoulders and build from there, but we have to do good work. We can't constantly make assumptions as to what something is. And
sure,
you know,
so here's a question. Can you take the work that they've done, and you've looked at some of their work on their website, and I know you're familiar with it, JD, can you take the work that they've done and can you take away the assumptions that are made and come up with scientific postulations based upon that?
Not really. They haven't given enough information. Like he said, you know, he doesn't even know how it works. I don't think anyone really does. Mm-hmm. And they're not familiar with it. There's not enough baseline there to go with. And you would have to study that. First, you have to know, and I've said this on the website many times in my posts, in order to understand something, it has to be quantified first. Then it can be measured.
Sure.
And it's just like within the paranormal, you know, we go seeking spirits and entities and things with all the gadgets and all, but that's not proving anything.
We don't know what we're looking for, so how can we prove it?
Right. That's what I'm saying. People will argue with you till they're blue in the face. Well, I had a spike on my EMF meter. I picked this up. I picked that up. But how do you know what you picked up if you don't know what your target is to measure? How do you know
or
that
if you're
even?
If you're using it incorrectly.
Well,
I mean, incorrectly. How do you know the spirit you're seeking emits any type of electromagnetic field?
Sure. Well, here's what I would say to you. I believe that Mark is a man of faith. Where does faith enter into the equation? Do you think at some point that you just have to make a leap of faith? I have faith, for instance, that my husband loves me.
Right.
I can't prove it. There's nothing that can prove it. There's nothing. I mean, you know, I can't scientifically quantify it, but there's faith there that that happens. Chad, you say that you don't believe in coincidence. That's a faith thing. So where does faith enter into it?
Faith enters into it everywhere. Faith is believing in something that you're not sure exists. That's faith. And
believing without seeing.
Yeah. You believe it without question, without seeing. And he obviously has a lot of faith. And
that's where the boggle point comes in, which I'm so glad you brought that up, Karen, because I had that on some other notes, and I forgot about it.
Yeah.
But you get so tied up in one side, one paradigm, that you can't leap over to the other.
Yeah, well, and I've made the point before, I think, in blog posts and things, that people always bring in Occam's razor, the simplest explanation, given all things being equal, is most likely the right one. And what I wonder, and what I've always wondered, is, isn't sometimes the simplest explanation that it's a ghost? Isn't it sometimes the simplest explanation that they're receiving communication from the other side? When does the science of it become more complicated than the faith-based simple explanation?
Well, that's a good question, Karen. Science and religion have always been at odds, and it always will be. It depends on your belief, your interpretation of both, actually. There are some people out there that are fundamentalists, and the way their Bibles are written, that's the way things are, period.
Right.
There's no room for negotiation. Scientists sometimes are the same way. They will look at a fact, and if they don't have that empirical evidence, they aren't willing to take the next leap to look for anything that might correlate that or be beyond that empirical evidence. And I had to put it in perspective. One of my mentors told me, when you're doing proper research, you will raise questions. You will constantly raise questions. When you run out of questions, you need to start over.
Yeah.
And it's like that. We always have questions, mm-hmm. and regardless. So as long as we have those questions, we have a path to follow. As long as we do proper scientific study of it. Now, faith and science, where does that happen? A lot of scientists, even versus 20 years ago, are coming around more to going from agnostic to becoming believers in religion.
Sure.
And why is that? Well, physics has done a lot for that, because I've been in that argument before, and it's not one I want to be in again, but you can always argue, you can always argue somebody back to the Big Bang Theory.
Sure.
And when it comes down to that amount of mass that created the Big Bang, and you ask them, where did that come from? They don't know.
Well, and, you know, I think that there can be a balance between science and faith. Now, I'm sure it's no secret that I come from a household where things like quantum physics and science are discussed a lot. You guys know my husband, Jim. He's mm-hmm. our quantum physics geek, and everything is very scientific with him. Well, I tend to, obviously, just if you listen to me in this conversation, well, I certainly always question everything and want to see it from a scientific standpoint. I also truly believe that faith plays a role in things, and that you need to have faith. I have faith in things, not necessarily the things that everyone else has faith in either. But when Jim and I have these discussions about quantum physics, and he comes from his purely scientific standpoint, and if I'm just feeling like a butthead, which sometimes I do, and I argue the purely faith-based standpoint, what we find is that really sometimes they're working to prove the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's
I agree
why
with
I
that.
I left all the scientific questions to you guys, because I come from a household of librarians, writers, and musicians. So
yeah.
I'm always interested in the experience, and I'll let somebody else ask the hard questions about science, because I don't have any argument to come back with.
Sure.
Well, it's a leap for me. When he was speaking of Marduk and Gilgamesh and things like
yeah.
that, immediately, I thought of the Epic of Gilgamesh, and, you know, he did mention he had read it in college. Well, it's possible that that could be subconscious. You know, he could have recalled these things subconsciously and wrote about them. I'm not saying, you know, he's not in contact with anybody or any entity or anything, but it like you said, Chad, you know, you don't believe in coincidence, but... that's one of the oldest writings that known to man, literally.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, we know that during the time that the early books of the Bible, the King James Version, was written, that there were Jewish scholars in Babylon writing these books. And a lot of scholars feel that the Noah flood epic was taken from that. And it,
yeah.
if you compare the Epic of Gilgamesh to the flood epic in the Bible, the correlations and the similarities are incredible. And, you know, it's just one of those things. What it boils down to is, like you said, Karen, it's faith, it's worldview, and what you believe.
Yeah.
Everybody's entitled to that. And, you know, it's what you believe.
Sure.
And it's like Chad said, it doesn't necessarily make it the truth.
True. But, you know, here's the thing. Look at it. We're all made of the same stuff.
Mm-hmm.
If you look at us at our very basest level, we're all made of the same stuff. We're made of energy. We're made of those quantum strings that are vibrating. That's what we're all made of. If you look at the human body is empty space with lots of little teeny particles floating far away. So what looks to be solid really isn't. We just don't know. We don't know things. There's new areas of scientific study. I have to believe that we're going to learn things, and that things are going to, that new sciences are going to happen. I just have to believe that.
You're right.
Has to.
You're right. And they will. They happen every day. They occur all the time. And it changes us. It changes our worldview. It changes the way we look at things. It changes our understanding of the universe around us. And it happens on a regular basis. Look at history. My last article about the Victorians in Paranormal Underground magazine, you've seen that, the advent of photography being introduced to them. They had no idea. That wasn't even a concept within their vocabulary or their worldview or their train of thought. And suddenly, you're able to take this box and capture someone's image. It opened their imagination. I mean,
right.
It exploded, you know, and that was one of the changes that happened during that period. But it's happened over and over and over. And you're right, Karen. There will be new sciences, new discoveries, and it will lead to new things. And it will eventually change our worldview and the way we perceive our universe.
Well, and that's it. I don't want to live in a world where there's nothing new to discover. What fun would that be?
Yeah, who does? That's right.
How about the old saying, there's nothing new under the sun?
Yeah.
Like maybe it's been around, we just haven't found it yet.
Absolutely.
Haven't seen it yet.
Yep, definitely.
So it's not really a new discovery, it's just finding something that we haven't tripped over yet.
Definitely. Well, you guys, we're almost out of time, but I want to get everybody's final thoughts. Let's start with Chad.
I'm going to kind of take Mr. Macy's side here. You don't have to. We're not here to please science. You know, we're here to just live our lives, and, you know, and it, to me, it doesn't really matter if you believe in an afterlife or not, because we all die anyways.
That's right.
And, you know, and if annihilation's there, that's fine. But if it's not, you know, at least if I believe in an afterlife, I have hope until that point.
Yep. Okay. Teresa, final thoughts?
I think this was a very interesting conversation. I'm really glad that you invited me to do this. It's a new experience for me. And I enjoyed speaking with Mark because he just has that faith, and the message that he brought across about how he goes about his investigations, the good feelings, good thoughts, and that attracting the same sort to you. I think that's something that all of us could take away and really utilize in our lives.
Absolutely. You can't fault the guy's message. Okay, JD, you get to wrap it up.
All right. Well, first of all, I have to agree with Teresa. His message, the basic premise of it is very, very strong. And if anyone could take anything from that, they would benefit from it in their lives. As far as the ITC and some of the concepts there, I have a very hard time accepting these things. I would have to see more scientific study. I would have to be a little more familiar with the materials and the devices that are used, how they work, how they operate, and whether or not they can affect the subjects that are being studied and photographed and that type of thing. But that's just me. And as Chad said, you know, he has a right to his worldview and what he believes in. And I am not faulting him in any way for that. So that's about all I have to say.
Well, I have an idea. Let's do some research.
Okay. That was just what I was thinking. There's only nine of these. There's only nine of these things in existence when this book came out. He has one of them.
Well, and they cost they're six figures. We can't afford Illuminator, but we can do some other research.
But,
that's
you know,
right.
He might let you do research on it.
Should I start soliciting donations? Anybody out there?
No, I'm just
send us a dime each.
maybe in the experiment section that JD's going to be hosting, he could talk with Mark a little further and maybe get to see this thing or ask the creators more questions about it.
Well, I think that we need to do. I think that we need to do some research about all sorts of things. So,
yeah. Well, I'm all about research. So.
Well, you're the boss then, JD. All right, guys. Anybody have anything else to say before we sign off? No.
Hope everybody has a great night.
Yeah. Thanks, guys.
Great being here.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
If you'd like to be a panelist on Paranormal Underground Presents or have a guest or topic suggestion, please email editor@paranormalunderground.net. Thank you for joining us.